We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. It is Super Bowl week, but it is a cup of Super Bowl week. It is our biggest charity week of the year next week. So come on out and see us on Monday at Costas. Tuesday, we'll be at Fadley's at Lexington Market. Wednesday, we're going to be at Coco's. Thursday, at State Fair in Catonsville. And on Friday, at Cooper's. We'll be there from noon until 5 in lieu of going to the Super Bowl, where I've been 27 times. I broadcast 27 years all week long. You can go back, see it all on the internet and all that stuff. But I met so many interesting people at these Super Bowls in all sorts of walks of life and all sorts of places around the country. And I'm trying to reach out to some old friends this week, as well as Super Bowl champions. Joe Flacco has been here and Mike Nolan has been here. We've had tons of Hall of Fame voters as well through all of this. But the week began at 6 a.m. with Luke Jones, and Luke and I got to talking about New Orleans, which of course is very special to anybody with the Ravens and 12 years ago and Joe Flacco, and I brought him on and all of that. And I started to think about my first real radio row, and I did attend the Super Bowl in Minneapolis in '92, and then in Phoenix after that for the Neil O'Donnell game in Tempe. But it was the first Super Bowl I really set up. As Nasty Nestor, we didn't have the radio station yet, but it was 1997, January 1997, in New Orleans. And I went down with Scotty P, and we did the whole week-long slog and took all of his equipment down, and we set up in the Hyatt. And I got to meet some really cool people. And this is one of the people that I met that week. And it was, I told the story on Monday morning about me vomiting because of this man 2 minutes before showtime on the Friday of Super Bowl weekend. I think I almost vomited on George Young's shoes, who was the general manager of the New York Giants at that point. John Stedman came by that day. I think Scott Garceau and Keith Mills visited. But Mike North came to me and said, "You don't have a suit deal. You don't have a, I'm going to take you out. I'm going to make a man out of you." And we drank little cups of beer on Bourbon Street, and I was 28 years old. North, I'm still, my stomach is still nauseous thinking about vomiting at the Hyatt Radio Row week at Super Bowl because I was such an amateur, and it was all your fault. Mike North is a Chicago legend. You'll hear the accent, his accent. He doesn't have an accent because he's from South Chicago. It is so good to see you. How are you? How is life in the Windy City?
It's great, Nestor. Good to talk to you. It's been a long, long time, man. We had a good time when we met up. I haven't been the radio world for a long time. I did 17 of them. I never went to a Super Bowl game. I just couldn't wait to get out of there after doing the week, you know. Those memories are great. We started out on, I remember Radio Row when we had, I don't know, 20 maybe different radio stations there at the beginning. And now they got hundreds, I understand. I mean, you know, they got whole warehouses full of radio stations, podcasting, and everything else. But we were like pioneers back then. I mean, sports radio was just getting started back then. And we were loosey-goosey, the whole thing. I don't know how it's changed now, but, you know, 1 minute, I mean, it was a dream come true for me, as I'm sure for you, your kid growing up in Chicago. And, you know, the next thing you look up, there's Joe Namath waiting to talk to you, Joe Montana waiting to talk to you. You know, guys like that of that ilk and Marshall Faulk. I'll never forget Marshall Faulk walking up to me as a rookie, you know, and they asking, "Would you like to interview this guy?" I go, "Yeah, sure." He had the gold chains on and everything else. So, yeah, it was special. It really was. And Radio World was a good time where I met not only you, but a bunch of great radio people. I don't know if it's changed or not, but I know that the media has changed quite a bit and the NFL has taken more control of things. But I'll tell you what, it was fun. It really was.
Well, I mean, you did it forever in Chicago, and your background as a hot dog vendor, famously. I've never had a dish, a deep dish pizza with you. I've never been to Pequod's with you. I got to change that. I got to affect that. Are you still in the? How many years did you did it every morning? I mean, you were a sensation in Chicago, along with my friend Chet Kopic and some others. And when I was syndicated and went out there at the turn of the century, I would see you guys, and I was a little part of Chicago for 5 minutes in that period of time at the turn of the century. But so many of you, and it was just such a great sports town, and it was sort of the back end of Jordan and Ditka and all that had been built there.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you've had the same situation, but I grew up in Chicago. I grew up on the north side. I ended up being a high school. I was a high school dropout. I took my GED, went into the Army, got out. I sold hot dogs. I had three hot dog places. We had standing stands there. And eventually, they said they were going to start a jazz station in Chicago. I ended up The owner, you came in to the place that was I had, and I told him, I said, you should start a sports station, of which they did. And that station's going to be 33 years old. I'm working at ESPN 1000 now. I do a wagering show on Fridays and Saturdays there. You could get me on ESPN 1000. I do some podcasting with the Bar Room. I have something that I do special. Somebody big just died, Bob Uecker, we just did. Whenever somebody of ilk dies, passes away, we do like 15, 20 minutes on them. So I do it for fun. But the ESPN job is a very serious job. I'm only on once a week. Now, I used to do 4 hours a day. I did 4 hours a day for 16 years. Then I went to Fox, and now I'm with ESPN. So I've made the circuit. I've survived. I'm still on terrestrial radio when a lot of my guys, in fact, the guys I started with, for the most part, aren't doing terrestrial radio anymore. So, yeah, it's been great. It's been a great career. But I was 39 when I met you, 39 or 40 when I met you. I didn't get into the business until I was in my 40s, and you were only 28 at the time.
Well, it's interesting. At that point, in 97, you went on the air when, Mike?
I went on the air in 92, so.
So did I. Yeah, I was 91. I was December of 91
yeah,
I went on the air.
Right. We were in New Orleans a few years after that, I think, I want to say.
It was 97. We were there. Yep.
Yeah, it was a great time. And, you know, hope everything goes well there. I used to go to New Orleans 2-3 times a year. But I will say this. To actually grow up in Chicago and to actually do shows with Gale Sayers, who I idolized, and to Dick Butkus, who became a friend. And Walter Payton and I were like this. We did shows. To just actually Ernie Banks, to know Ernie. I used to run home from school to watch him back because they played just day baseball. And to become his buddy, to become friends with all these guys. Bobby Hull of the Blackhawks. Then later on, Jeremy Roenick. Frank Thomas. I mean, just to be a kid from Chicago and to do Chicago sports and to have the biggest stage in Chicago for a long time was a dream come true. I don't know if I fully enjoyed it because there was always pressure back then. Back then, it was all about ratings, as you know, all about making money, bringing in, which we did. But, you always came to play, always gave 100%. And I've never missed a day, never missed a day of work in 33 years, never took a day off. They had to force me to take vacation. I go, this isn't work. This isn't work. I did this on the street corner 6 hours a day after school and stuff with my buddies. So it's been a blessed thing and get to meet people like yourself. But the venue's changing. The talk shows are on TV now, and there are a lot of scripts, a lot of scripted things, which I don't agree with. I
100% agree with you, bro. Like, I got syndicated after I met you. I met you in 97, and I had that crazy newsletter that I sent to you and everybody else, right?
Yeah.
Chicago, up on the north side in Northbrook, it was 101 Sports.
I remember.
And Sporting News
Papa
Radio.
Joe. Papa Joe. And
oh,
all those
my heart. He still owes me a steak at Burns Steakhouse at SOB. So I love him. I wrote a beautiful tribute to Papa Joe when he died, and it's still up on the internet. It's really the only tribute that was written to him. And people, once a year, somebody will find it and say, oh my God, sure. I knew Joe, loved Joe, whatever. So, but I went to Chicago and I was syndicated in 98, 99. And then in late 99, they told me you're going to broadcast from NFL Films in Philly. You're going to drive up and do the show with Brian Baldinger every Monday. We did NFL Monster Monday. Steve Sable, Jaworski, Greg Cosell was on the show this week. He was a part of it. Ray Dittinger, great writer from the Philadelphia Inquirer, was a guy who wrote all those John Facenda scripts. He was the writer of the voice of NFL. So I get up there to NFL Films, and the first day I'm there, I've been doing radio maybe 8 years in sports, and I owned the station by then. So I owned a radio station.
I remember.
I'm nationally syndicated. I go up to, and there was a guy there. He's a beautiful man, and I'm not picking on him, and I'll even say his name. His name's George Krieger. He hired me. He was a television guy. He hired Jimmy Johnson, Terry Bradshaw, Howie. He was the original Fox. JB was on Fox. He was the original guy that put Fox football in 95, 96, 97 together. And now he was like doing radio. He came up to me, Northy, I'm at NFL Films and I'm about to do this show and Steve Sable. And he had note cards and he was writing out the script for me. And I swear to God, to this day, it's the funniest thing ever. Here I am doing live radio 4 hours a day, 51 weeks a year, 20 hours a week. And I come in, and this guy is now handing me note cards, and he's writing me the script for what I'm going to. Hello, everyone. My name is Nestor Aparicio, and welcome to our first
That's
edition
right.
of. Literally, he's right. And I looked at him, and I'm like, dude, I can't work like this.
Now you
You
got
got
to
to be
go off the hook.
kidding me, dude.
You know what? What happened was, I saw something not too long ago where a guy went out on Twitter, and you could check me out on X at North to North, NORTH, number 2 NORTH. And he said, me and my buddies are meeting tonight, and I have a list of things we're going to talk about. I'm going, hold on. No. I never took a script. In fact, when I went to work at Fox Sports Radio with the great Andy Furman, I did with Andy for 3 years, and we did the morning show. I took somebody's place, and Bruce Gilbert, who was then the boss, says, "You know, just take over, Mike. I know the other guy was—he wasn't showing up," and blah blah blah. I go, "No problem." I hear from Andy Furman. He goes, "I'll send you a script in the morning," and I said, "Don't ever send me a script," and he never did. And we did it just like natural. You didn't go to the street corner. You didn't go to the bar. You didn't go to the restaurant and say, "All right, in our first part of our talk before coffee comes, we're going to talk about the Super Bowl. Then we're going to talk about the NBA ratings once the bacon and eggs come. And then after the bacon and eggs are done, we're going to probably order another coffee, maybe some orange juice. Then we'll talk about realignment in the NHL." No, you just show up, you do the show. That's the way I always wanted it. And even when I did TV in Chicago, I won a couple Emmys because I didn't have the teleprompter. I did it all straight off my head because back in 92, we didn't have computers. In fact, the best thing that ever happened in 92, 93, when the station I was at started, were car phones. Were car phones. And the best thing that ever happened was no Twitter, no social media, because I wouldn't be here with some of the antics that I know I pulled and a bunch of other guys pulled, if you did something and then 10,000 people would type in. And then the next thing you know, the bosses are alerted and everything else. So we were mostly left alone. We held people captive with the car phones, and that's how it went. But as far as scripting goes, we never scripted. Now they do all the time, I guess.
When I got the gig at Sporting News at 101 Sports,
Yeah.
every morning I would have Cliffy Saunders or Matt Nahegi and my
Cliff
producers,
Saunders, right.
right? They would hit me. And this is when Rich Johnson had Sports Pages, which was the first internet place where you
Right.
could read the Chicago Tribune in the morning. And I didn't want to read Jay Mariotti, but he
Right.
was there. So
Sure.
nonetheless, and I wound up working with him. But we would do these meetings in the morning, and I'm like,
No way.
guys, I'm not doing my show for you at 9 in the morning. And they would come to me and say, we got to talk about Patrick Ewing and golf today. And I'm like, and so like that was 24 years ago
Oh,
now.
yeah.
I look, they threw me out here 3 years ago because they didn't want me asking questions. Last week, Mark Andrews doesn't even show up at the podium when he drops the ball with the season on the line. Northy, things have changed. The
Oh, yeah.
accountability's still there at the hot dog stand. The accountability's still there at the bar stool, on Twitter. The accountability's there, but is it really there if the player doesn't accept the accountability?
Well, no. And the problem is that a lot of the newspapers now, a lot of the which are dwindling. Because, you know, legacy media isn't what it was. But now, when you see somebody like Mark Andrews do something like that, the NFL controls the message now. And I've always said in the last 10, 15 years, the thing that's changed is one, they don't want hosts to do shows that are going to work at flagship stations. Because if the team, for instance, if the team that you're, flagship station of is the White Sox, and they've won 41 games. It's not going to be a lot of fun. You know what I mean? The bottom line is that the newspapers now for football teams, the writers are more PR arms for the team now. Okay. There are stories that go unsolved. There are stuff that happens in Chicago that, you know, we had a couple coaches fired last year. We still don't know why they were fired. Because if the team tells you, there's a guy that's been on the beat in Chicago at Halas Hall in Lake Forest for 20 years. Well, you're not working for the paper anymore. You're working for the Bears if you've been there 20 years. and you're going to do probably just about whatever they tell you to do. If they tell you not to run a story, you're not going to run a story. See, I think that reporters should rotate out of those jobs every 2-3 years. You get too familiar with the people. You get too familiar with the lunchroom. You get too familiar with the team. So that's the thing that's changed. I think the teams now and the NFL control most of the message, where before it was more or less the media. And I here in Chicago, a guy wrote a bad, I remember George Halas. There was a guy named Ed Stone. He wrote a column he didn't like. He was off the beat back in the day. Off the beat. You're messing with George Halas, you know, back in the day. So things have changed. But then again, things haven't changed all that much. There's ways to get your word out. There's ways to make your point. You just can't make it the way you used to. But that's starting to change, too.
Well, I think the accountability of who gets to even ask the questions when they throw people like me who are qualified out, that there's no one there to ask a qualified question. And if they do, Harbaugh stink eyes them to the point where you're intimidated to not even ask an appropriate question. Like, where's the tight end to be accountable after he drops the ball with the season on the line? That is... If you're not asking that question, you're not doing your job on behalf of the people or on behalf of your organization or really on behalf of yourself, because you're asking someone to not do their job. You're demanding or forcing them to not do their job. And I've watched all of that changed. And, you know, I'm going to be the dog that's going to bark about that, Northie.
Well, that's why podcasting and everything else has become big. That's like why radio stations aren't as powerful as they used to be. I never dreamt back when in the heyday, there was nobody that was going to take over our show. Nobody that was going to beat our show. Nobody was going to beat our station. We were a highly rated station. And we never, you know, I brokered time to get into the business.
You know, So did I.
Right. I had to pay $200 for the hour. And then I paid $100 to bring my own producer in. I didn't want one of theirs. So I paid $300 a week. I did 1 hour show at 8 in the morning on Saturday. They ran it on a brokered channel at night, you know, and I was wedged between the Father Justin Rosary Hour and, you know, a couple religious shows, for God's sake. But anything to get on the air back then, and then I listed in the Sun Times. Now you can get a podcast up, but now there's thousands of guys. And now podcasters are making money, so it's more more stretched out now. The money isn't all going to the traditional radio stations, and that's been a problem. And, you know, if you have a station with no bite and you have podcasters in the same city with bite, it's tough to compete.
Mike North is here. He has been competing.
Yeah, baby. I sounded almost serious there for a minute.
34 years.
I almost sounded like a PD. Oh, my God.
No. You know, this is good. We're grown-ups now because we were gunner down vomiting in the streets of Bourbon Street 27 years ago.
Yeah.
Mike North is here. He covers all things Chicago sports. Yeah. You know, I've been collecting this is my childhood belt buckle from 1971. I collect rock and roll, the old rock and roll belt buckle is my thing because I had a Led Zeppelin one, so I have 100 of them now. And they're cool and they're valuable and they're neat to wear or whatever. Sure. But I had this Colt one, and I've gone back in time to, like, I have a Bears one now, so I've been picking these guys up. So for you, with the state of football and Lamar and running and the way the game has changed and Josh Allen and what Patrick Mahomes has pulled up, we're really in a different era of football, and it's been a glorious era in Baltimore to win championships since the time I met you and to go through Joe Flacco and get to Lamar Jackson. But the Bears are still I mean, and it's a great football town. It's a great sports town in a lot of ways. And it's the comings and goings of the Cubs and the White Sox, and given my last name, right, for 5 minutes on the South Side.
I love it.
They get traction for sports in Chicago. It's been a little while since the Bulls sort of owned a piece of it. Sure. But the Bears are such a disappointment, right? Just perennially, right?
Well, I have the same ownership I had when I was born. 72 years of owners, the same owners. George Halas and now his daughter, Virginia. She's 100 years old. The last time she had sex, I think she was in a covered wagon, for God's sake. I mean, that's how old she is. And they have a family structure that just hasn't worked. We just hired Ben Johnson, which not everybody's crazy about. I was a guy that wanted Pete Carroll. And now Pete Carroll ends up going to Raiders, only has to answer to one guy. In Chicago, they have to answer to a GM who's 17-36, Ryan Poles, Kevin Warren, the president, George McCaskey, Virginia McCaskey. They've never changed their situation there. They won in 85 with the old regime, and then Michael McCaskey came in and got rid of guys like Wilbur Marshall, Mike Ditka eventually, Willie Gault, all our stud players, and we haven't won since. We went back in 2006 with a quarterback named Rex Grossman, almost knocked off Peyton Manning, but we've only been to one Super Bowl, and I won't see another one. This is a bad football team. I don't know. Ben Johnson cannot bring the Detroit Lions players with him. Ben Johnson did not change the Detroit Lions. Dan Campbell changed the Detroit Lions, just like Ditka changed the Bears. But, you know, he sounded a lot to me like he was going to be the offensive coordinator the other day for Caleb Williams, not the head football coach of a charter franchise who's going to have to worry about special teams, who's going to have to worry about defense, who's going to have to worry about offense. So he's green. Pete Carroll, 73, I heard he was too old. Well, I said, I'm 72, and I'll go all night long like Lionel Richie. But you see, there's this ageism process. The last four Bear coaches, 46, 54, 38, and now 38. So that's what youth will get you. A lot of aggravation. I mean, we've had coaches every 3 years now. I leased my Cadillac when the Bears get rid of a coach every 3 years because we haven't been able to decide on one. Now, this Ben Johnson, we'll find out. First time coaching the team. Not going to be in a dome, Nestor. He coached 11 games or 10 to 12 games in a dome this year. You're going to be outside at Soldier Field in November and December. Plus, we have an away schedule this year. The AFC, you guys, we got Pittsburgh, we got Baltimore, we got Cincinnati, we got some teams that we're going to be playing that's not going to be, it's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be pretty. It's going to take a couple years, but your guess is as good as mine. He's 50-50. I wanted Carroll. I wanted somebody maybe like Kingsbury, like Mike McCarthy, somebody who's been there, done that, and to clean up the mess, because it's not just a mess on the football field. It's a mess permeating the whole situation there as far as front office and stuff.
I'm an Oriole fan. I'm familiar with this, my brother. You know what I'm saying? We're really close to the Washington football team to see how that's changed here on the other end of Maryland as well. Right?
Well, see, what I heard was, oh, Caleb Williams is generational. I go, you know, I watched him against Notre Dame. I don't have to watch a whole lot of football. I've been watching football quarterback since 1961. I said, I've been watching. He didn't look that good to me. Yeah, but he does good against Fresno State. And again, I go, I don't know. I go, what about Jaden Daniels? Well, he won the Heisman Trophy. He goes, yeah, but Caleb Williams won the Heisman Trophy the year before. I go, what does that even mean? I go, so they decided to take Caleb Williams, not even entertain trades. Nobody was knocking down the door. They knew that Drake May was out there. They knew that there were other quarterbacks out there that could play, and Bo Nix. And so Washington, Jaden Daniels falls. They just, the Bears take Caleb. They get Jaden Daniels. The guy wins 12 games, and he's as good as any quarterback, rookie quarterback I've seen, period.
Well, I mean, as accomplished as anybody ever to get to the championship game, right? Mike North is here.
I love it when you say that.
I like Mike North here. Mike North is here from Chicago. It's been too long. I don't think we've done radio together this century, which is kind of crazy. No. I did your show a couple of times at the Super Bowl.
You did mine.
But it's been a while for sure. And hey, I appreciate you. I hope you're doing well. At some point, I got to get a hot dog with you. I mean,
all
in
right,
Chicago,
now
right?
Let me know when you're in Chicago. I don't travel too much anymore. You know what I mean? I heard they were in Atlanta sleeping overnight at the airport. You know what I mean? For the football game. You didn't go to that, did you?
No. So when I come to Chicago, it's usually a concert involved. And my friends on the north side, my dear friend Stan Jablonski, lives up by O'Hare. Sure, we go to Pequod's and we get that proper caramelized pizza. Yeah. None of that deep dish. I mean, that's fine, but it's not my thing. It's good, but it's not great. I get to Pequod's, so I'm going to invite you up to Pequod's up on the north side.
We'll do that.
It's got to be one of the weeks of summer, so either June or July.
I'll be around, buddy. I ain't going anywhere, kid.
One of the 2 weeks of summer they get there in Chicago. Mike North, Chicago legend, man of the people, and freezing his ass off because he's in Chicago. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Just seeing your face makes me think of that hangover in New Orleans. Back for more right after this.